2025. It's a regular planning board meeting. Can I have everybody's attention? I'd like to go to a flag salute. This meeting's been advertised pursuant to Public Law 231, also known as the Open Public Meeting Act. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Can I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Adams?
Here.
Mr. Allegretto?
Here.
Mr. Barnes?
Here.
Mr. Becker? Mr. Birch? Mrs. Halliday?
Here.
Mr. Jessel? Mr. Loper?
Here.
Mr. Shepherd?
Here.
Mr. Stell? Dr. Vandeshore?
We have two items on the agenda tonight. The first one is PBA 22-026 Shoemaker, 1124 1162 West Avenue, Block 1106, Lot 10, DB Zone.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to
refuse
myself for this application.
Thank you.
Can you ask anybody with electronic to turn it off?
And if there's anybody with any kind of electronic stuff in here, can you turn it off or mute it? Because this is all pretty sensitive recording material. Mr. Fusco.
Good evening, everybody. This is an amended application for the proposed new store that was previously approved by the board. And essentially, the amendment brings out a smaller store than was approved by the board. There are no new variances. The variances are the same as they were before. There are some slight changes. Some have been less intense under this new store. And the one that will be a little more intense is the impervious coverage, because you're going to have more paving area now because you're going to have a smaller building. I think I'll just defer to John to go through everything. We catalog all the variances that were approved. They're seeking them to be carried in this. Some of them have improved from what was previously granted with a larger store. The only thing increasing somewhat is the impervious surface coverage. But the building coverage has gone from 36% as approved now to 32%. So with that, I'll ask John to come up and give you the presentation.
Good evening, Mr. Albert. The testimony you're about to give this evening, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self for God.
It is.
And Mr. Halburn has been on front of us many occasions, and we are familiar with his credentials, and he may proceed.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to take your lead on how much you want to be going through the prior approval and background. You want me to jump right into just what's changed. For sake of brevity, I can jump into just what's changed. If you think the background is important, I'm happy to go through that. I'll tell you what, I'll start going through the background that gets the start rolling your eyes.
I think everybody up here is familiar with the background.
Okay, great.
So if you do a brief background and then continue on the new, we'll be fine, I think.
We were here several years ago, a couple years ago, to get approval for a new Shoemaker retail store whose dimensions were 168 feet by 70 feet. With that came a number of variances that were associated with the building and the site improvements. I'll go to those in more detail very briefly. What we're here for you this evening is a pretty simple change. That building just got 30 feet shorter, 30 feet smaller in footprint. And with that becomes a larger loading and loading area on the north side, which was one size before, now 30 feet bigger. The number of parking spaces remains identical to what was approved, although the parking demand was reduced by several spaces. With that very general description of what was approved and what's changing now, I can jump right into the variances, unless there's any questions whatsoever about what's being proposed or what was originally proposed.
We'll get the questions at the end.
Probably. Okay, good. So there were a number of variances that were granted under the original approval, most of which remain unchanged or have been mitigated by the current proposal. There is one variance that remains absolutely unchanged, and that was a rear yard setback, which would be the north property line up against the water company property to our storage rack. A 4-foot setback was required. A 1-foot setback to our storage rack was approved then and remains totally unchanged by this application. Storage rack is still there, still 1 foot away. The last application also required a minimum side yard setback variance, that side yard setback coming off of West Avenue, where there is a 4 feet required, if we were granted a 1.6 foot setback to the roof overhang. The building itself was setback in a compliant distance, but the roof overhang, as originally approved, was 1.6 feet. We've modified that roof overhang to be a larger setback. We're now proposing that roof overhang on West Avenue to be 3.47 feet, still slightly deficient from the 4 foot required. So the side yard setback remains, though it's been mitigated by being reduced from 1.6 feet to 3.47 feet. The maximum impervious surface coverage in the zone, we're in the DB zone by the way, is 90%. We were previously approved for 91%. With the changes we now propose to be 93%, still not compliant where the maximum is 90, but this is still an improvement over the existing conditions at 95%. The minimum number of parking spaces. As we were approved, there was 38 spaces proposed and approved. Originally, there was a demand for 46 and a half, we'll call it 47 spaces based upon the building and the employee count, originally approved. Because of the reduction in the building footprint size, no change in the employee count, the number of required spaces is reduced to 43.2, or round that up to 44. So 44 spaces currently proposed to be required, and we are proposing to maintain the same 38 spaces that were approved. So the variance remains, though the number of required parking spaces has been reduced by 3. An interesting footnote is, those are 38 parking spaces on site. Consistent with the original approval, there is a surplus of 5 parking spaces directly across the alley on what we call the rack storage lot that was proposed then, continue to be available to us now. There were a number of variances relating to the minimum parking area setbacks, setbacks of both the building and property lines. 4 feet required to the buildings, 4 feet required to the property line. As originally approved and as presently continue to be proposed, 0 feet remains to the building, 0 feet remains to the 12th Street setback, and 1 foot is proposed off the alley setback where 4 proposed. Again, these conditions are identical to that which was originally approved, they have not changed. There is a new variance required now for the maximum trash enclosure. Before, we had 120 square foot trash enclosure, we now increased that to be 180 square feet. So that being considered a shed is more than the 100 square feet permitted, so that does trigger the need for a new variance for a maximum trash enclosure slash shed size. And lastly, as was originally approved, we propose to have loading and unloading access continuous through from West Avenue to the alley. That does require a variance because the ordinance says when you have alley access, that access should be limited for unloading and loading to being from the alley. Same truck circulation, same path that we originally proposed, remains consistent today. So, that's a summary of the variances that were granted and which we continue to propose for this evening. Are there any questions regarding those?
Any board questions at this point to the applicant?
Yeah, I have a question. Where's the 2% impervious excess coming from if the building? You said the building was reduced, so it becomes paved area, but wouldn't the building be considered impervious as well?
Yes, but there was landscaping in front of the building that's not being paved as part of the loading and unloading area.
So 2% is 2% of the lot area, 31,000 square feet.
Correct.
That's quite a bit. Is there that much landscaping, 2% of 31,000 square feet?
Well, that's certainly going to be the lion's share of where that difference is coming from, yes.
Any other questions?
Okay, so these same variances which we are looking to renew are all advanced under the C2 criteria for the benefits of granting the variance outweigh the detriments. One both for civil purposes and municipal land use law that are being advanced by the application, thus establishing the positive side of that balancing test. First of all, the purpose to encourage municipal action to guide the appropriate use of development lands in a matter which promote the public health, safety, morals, and general welfare is absolutely advanced by the complete redevelopment of this entire area that the project embodies. Second of all, to secure safety from fire, flood, plant, and natural man-made disasters. The existing store is well below the 1 foot elevation. The new store will be slightly below but flood-proof and thus very compliant with all flood damage prevention requirements. Another purpose is being advanced is to provide adequate light, air, and open space. The amount of open space that will result from this development has dramatically increased from the current conditions. Another purpose would be to provide sufficient space and appropriate locations for a variety of agricultural, residential, recreational, commercial, industrial uses according to the respective needs of New Jersey citizens. Next purpose would be to encourage and location design transportation routes, which promote the free flow of traffic. And lastly, and probably the biggest impact the community will recognize, will be promoting the design of a visual environment through creative development techniques. All of those are benefits that this development will have to the public and to the community, and thus I believe establishes the positive criteria. Switching over now to the negative criteria to pile up the potential negatives that may have this effect on the scale, it's a two-pronged attack. First of all, you must demonstrate that there will be no substantial detriment to the public good. And when you look at the variance relief that you're seeking, as I won't try and repeat all the same testimony we did for the original application, there really is no negative impact. Everything we're proposing here will have an absolutely positive impact on the neighborhood. So to say that there's a substantial detriment to the public good, I can't find any way with which that would be a true statement. The second problem would be to demonstrate that there's no substantial impairment to the zone plan. Again, we are developing this in a DB zone with a business that is entirely consistent with the purpose of the zone plan, so there certainly cannot be a substantial impairment to the zone plan by this development. For those reasons, I believe the negative criteria has been satisfied. The positive criteria overwhelmingly outweighs the negative, and for those reasons, the requested variance, I believe, may be granted. Besides the variances, there were several design waivers that were originally proposed and approved that remain enforced in part of this application. I'll run through them very briefly. The first has to do with signage. The number of signs, or the maximum number of signs permitted, was 4. We originally proposed 6. It's been reduced to 5. So the waiver still holds, but we've reduced the number of signs by 1. There's a design waiver requirement that trash enclosures be separated from the adjacent paved areas by a raised curb. Ours is a full CMU enclosed wall. The raised curb would serve no purpose. We're not proposing one. Next is a maximum open wire fence height, where the maximum permit is 8 feet. We're proposing 10 feet, just like the original application. And then those waivers that relate to talk about landscaping, we need to provide 1 shade tree for every 5 spaces, plus a perimeter shrubbery. In order to maximize the number of parking spaces, we've not provided the required number of shade trees. We have provided perimeter shrubbery, but we were able to. The next design waiver would be raised median separating the street from the parking lot. Because of the traffic flow at the intersection of 12th parking lot in the alley, and that we're maintaining, we don't have that raised median. Again, that condition is identical to what was originally approved. And lastly, curb and sidewalk replacement on the existing store site. We're not proposing to do that as part of this instant application, saving that replacement for the ultimate development of that site, which will take place after the demolition of that building and the ultimate future disposition of that site. So that's a summary of the design waivers that the application requires. I think I've addressed each of the variances. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any additional questions to the applicant?
Just a little Brian.
Yes.
If you talk about the shrub that I'm looking at right now, I see there's some trees along, I guess, the building side of the sidewalk, right there in the shrub there. But I guess there's 4 trees you're putting along in the sidewalk along the curb. Is that what I'm seeing there?
Yes, we have 4 street trees that are within the traditional location between the curb and the sidewalk. Those 2 that you see that are not along the street, curb is actually on these, at the back of the sidewalk side. Right. That's to keep them out of the site triangle. You'll see a site triangle right. On the landscaping plan.
Right.
But in terms of street trees, we are proposing a total of 6 street trees. 4 the traditional location, 2 behind the sidewalk because of the site triangle considerations.
Right. Yeah. Only because I guess in that area, I prefer to see them not along the curb there because of parking and doors opening, things like that. I mean, on the other side, south would fine. Or if you just want to rather do a donation and eliminate those 4 trees, I'd be okay with that. So it seems like, because I don't think there's trees there now, and I just don't see it necessarily happen right along the curb.
Can we pop one back?
we've got the ability, if you were to put the street trees and move them on the backside of the sidewalk, just grant us the waiver for the location.
Okay.
And we're very happy to make that change.
I think it'd be better, I mean, you know, for a commercial area, people getting out with doors and things like that, just seems like it creates a tripping hazard in the sidewalk a lot of times. So if we put them on the other side in the grass area.
Exactly. And I don't want to ignore your bicycle.
Anything else for the applicant?
So are the number of trees compliant, or do you still need to make a donation?
The trees are conforming, and it looks to me like they would be still designated street trees. They'd be within 14 feet of the curb.
Okay, so six are required and six are
required. Did you get on the side of the sidewalk?
Yeah, behind the sidewalk.
Okay.
Previously, I had three shade tree contributions, so that's no longer.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. If you're at rest at this point. Mr. Shule.
Okay, Mr. Hooper, in reference to my report of July 3rd, we did have an opportunity to meet via subcommittee with the applicant on July 31st. I addressed and clarified a number of comments in my report at that time. Mr. Halbringer has gone over the prior approvals and the commonality between what's being proposed now and the prior approvals. I agree for the most part, but I have a few things I just want to clarify. I'm looking at variances being required where the new building is, where a new building is being proposed. Not for the parking, not for the parking setback, because they're not changing. But the fact that you're getting a new building now, different from the other one, in my opinion, those setbacks, things related to that, would now require variances. I don't have any issues with those, but I think just to be clear, I think variances would be required for setbacks related to the building itself. There are a couple of those. The impervious coverage is obviously one of them. The number of parking spaces, I think along the same lines too, the fact that we're looking at a different building that's not the same building, but I would support a variance. Actually, we don't need a variance because I think what the testimony was that the number of spaces would comply with the ordinance now. No,
but we're still deficient.
Is it 44 and 38?
Correct. If you don't count the additional five available to us.
Good. In my opinion, a variance would be required in that case as well because of the fact we're looking at a different building. The parking area setbacks, only those related to the building would apply, in my opinion, not those to the property line because those aren't changing. The maximum number of signs in my report, there was an error down in that schedule. I thought the schedule was incomplete at the time this report was issued. But the signs are all conforming with respect to sign area. It's just the fact that the number of signs is above what the ordinance would permit. That takes care of setbacks with the building coverage. Parking setbacks and trash enclosure size, shed size where 100 feet is permitted and 180 square feet is being proposed. Design waiver for maximum number of signs, trash enclosure curbing. The West Avenue access is okay, that was approved previously, there's no change being made there. The maximum open wire fence height approved previously?
Yes.
So no additional approval needed for that open wire fence, previously approved 10 feet. And the parking lot landscaping was previously approved also. So those design waivers do not apply, just the first two. Again, we had an opportunity to review this via site plan committee. They addressed comment number two. Comment number three has to do with the oversized shed. Comment number four has to do with design waiver for curbing related to that trash enclosure. Still applies. Proposed lighting conforms to the ordinance. The gas exchange has been addressed. We talked about possible bicycle racks for employees. It was just a suggestion. There's not a requirement in the ordinance for that. I know Mr. Halbringer has an additional comment on that or not, but either way, it would be fine. It was just a thought that I had for their employees. Comment number eight was addressed at the site plan subcommittee. Number nine would be a condition of approval. And number 10, generally defer all the site grading, stormwater, utility drainage to your board engineer. And the standard conditions for
preliminary and final are as you normally would see those.
Any questions for Mr. Shule at this point? Seeing none, we'll reserve, but I'm going to Mr. Scheidick, our board engineer.
Thank you, John, the chairman and board members. Our last report was July 8, 2025. Most of the report addresses the variances that were previously granted and what are required, and we've been through that. Mr. Halberg did a good job of identifying them. Randy has since identified the variances and waivers only related to the new building. I had something that I think, John, I think you should talk about again for us, how Lot 3, the site of the old existing Shoemaker building, how that's going to work in conjunction with this new building. I'd like for you to do that. We had a recommendation, we had a requirement that the plans be revised and indicate 4 inches of stabilized base course in that alley, in the repaving that's proposed as part of this. And water meter vault is always an issue, so John, if you could touch on that, it would be also appropriate at this time.
Because the building will not be suppressed, we won't need a vault. It'll be a standard water meter.
That is a good answer.
And in terms of the existing store site, we are proposing, through sequencing, that when the new store is constructed, all the inventory in the existing store will be moved over. And when that takes place, the existing store will be demolished. There is no proposed development on that lot. We will lawn that site, and if it's left for a certain amount of time, it's on the plans, I forget the exact time period, it'll be landscaped with shrubbery and trees. If it goes undeveloped beyond that timeline, the idea is we're going to create that lot as an out parcel for sale for someone to come develop however they see fit, which is also why we're not proposing to replace the curb and sidewalk in front of that now, because that curb and sidewalk will be destroyed by the ultimate development of that site. So it's going to serve, that lot will serve very temporarily as parking for us as we construct a parking lot on the new property site. So new building gets built, inventory gets moved from the old building to the new building, old building gets demolished. We use that old building site for a week or two for temporary parking while we construct the parking lot next to the new building. You follow that logic?
And then when the new parking lot is constructed, you will no longer use that old site for parking.
Correct. That will be converted to a lawn landscaped area if it isn't already being developed under a separate application. But at this thing it's not, we will landscape it and it will be a vacant lot.
Very good.
Okay.
On the issue of the bike racks, I have a solution that the board wants to entertain it. I'm happy to do it. It'll result in 30 square feet of additional impervious coverage. And I'll pass out an exhibit.
He was asking for questions.
Were you done, Dave?
I was. I was finished with my report and then John.
I'm sorry, I checked that in here.
No, we're good. Thank you.
Wouldn't mind just that. If you want to pass it around.
Okay. Mr. Albert,
can I have one, please?
We're going to mark that in the
And I've got a larger version of the same thing here I want to refer to. Had an idea to take the
bike rack exhibit.
Pedestrian.
Gary, hold on 1 second, please. Bike rack exhibit. You good with that?
You good?
Yeah.
I have the thought to take the pedestrian sidewalk entrance along West Avenue, and if we were to simply pave a larger area of that, of which 30 square feet is on our property, the rest would be within the right of way, we could fit 12 foot worth of bike racks for employees or customers. I hesitate to volunteer that originally because it does result in some additional coverage, but if the board thinks it's important, I frankly think it's a pretty good idea. For 30 square feet of more impervious coverage, we can provide that.
Wouldn't it also need an encroachment license, Randy, Dave? If it goes beyond the property line into the right-of-way, it's going to need an encroachment license.
The racks are on the property, so just, okay. There would be no improvement within the right-of-way.
I thought he said they were overhanging.
Correct. The bike racks itself would be on the property. Yeah. Someone parking the bike, part of the bike would overhang. Yeah. Correct. Okay. But the structure itself would be within the property. And that's something that we can very easily accommodate if the board want to entertain that and grant us another 30 square feet of impervious coverage.
And the bikes wouldn't overhang the sidewalk because you'd have additional distance there between you?
Correct. It wouldn't overhang the sidewalk, but They would be within the technical right of the
landscape there. That looks good.
Yeah. Maybe when the after the public speaks and you frame a motion, I'll frame the motion with the additional 30 square feet for the bike racks, and then the board can discuss it and vote it up on that.
No. I would like to open this up to the public. Do I have a motion?
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We're at basically Shoemaker Lumber at 1124 West Avenue. Anybody have any comment? Please come forward at this time. Seeing no public comment, I'd like to close the public comment. Do I have a motion?
Shepherd. Shepherd and
that. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Back to the applicant for closing. Nothing further. Can you frame a motion for us?
Yes, I can, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. Gentlemen, what's before you is the amendment to a previously presented preliminary and final site plan approval been presented by Mr. Fusco, testified to by Mr. Alvarez. Variances, I think the variances as outlined by Mr. Shull, and also testified to by Mr. Hammer, and then properly identified together with the sign waiver. I do have a question from Mr. Fusco. Mr. Fusco, in the Shull report of July the 3rd and the Shining report of July the 8th are acceptable to apply, is that right?
Correct.
Very well. Thank you, gentlemen. And the chair can entertain a motion in the affirmative to approve the amendment to the previously approved site plan together with the new variances required and design waivers 1 and 2 and with an additional 30 square feet pendant to the application for impervious coverage to include the bicycle rack. There is now no requirement for a street tree variance. The location will be adjusted per the discussion. Yeah. Chair can entertain it in one motion and approach it that way.
Based on what we've heard from our solicitor, do I have a motion?
Yes.
Do I have a second?
Farms.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Allegretto.
I remind Mr. Allegretto and all others voting to specify your reasons for the vote. I'm sorry, who was the second?
Barnes. Mr. Allegretto.
I will vote yes. I feel the variances and the waivers asked for and permitted certainly improve the project, certainly with the downside of the building, the parking and flow of traffic around there, I think is a positive. And your bike ride is a positive. Certainly when you see a business like this succeed, New York City is one of the anchors of our town and for the residents too, so I vote yes.
Mr. Barnes?
I'm going to vote yes as well for the reasons previously stated. In particular, I really like the bike rack idea. This is a bicycle town. And the overall changes to the project, I think, arrive at a net positive result on the improvements. So I vote yes.
Mr. Shepherd?
I vote yes for the previously stated. Again, I'm really looking forward to see this project go through. I pass it every day. I think it's pretty awesome. The new look will be very nice for our town.
Mr. Adams?
I also vote yes. I,
I'd like to propose the first time we approved it, I don't see any detriment with these new requests and alterations. I still think that as much as I did the first time, how well designed this project is, and I'm looking forward to seeing it go as well.
Mr. Loper?
For all the reasons previously stated, and also this is a multi-generational building that's been here for a long time, and I think this will help it go into the next generation.
Is that a yes?
It's a yes.
Officially a yes.
Number two on the agenda is review the resolution, review the council resolution for the area in need of redevelopment block 3313 Bay Avenue, block 3306, lot 1. You, Mr. Shule has a document for us.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. What you have before you is a preliminary investigation. It was generated to address council's resolution. Council has passed resolution number 2562462, ultimately requesting the planning board to review a proposal to designate block 3306 lot 1 as an area needed rehabilitation. A report was prepared August 18th, 2025. Page 1 of the report, very brief introduction, make reference to council's resolution. I also provide basically why we're here doing this under the NJSA statute. That's the local redevelopment housing law criteria. It says prior to the adoption of the resolution, that's council resolution 2562462, governing body shall submit to the municipal planning board for its review. Within 45 days of receipt, proposed resolution, the municipal planning board shall submit its recommendations regarding the proposed resolution, including any modifications which it may recommend to the governing body for its consideration. That's why we're here, to basically look at council's resolution for this property. That resolution provides a history of development on the subject property, including its original construction as a hotel, conversion to a condo, deferred maintenance and repairs, and subsequent structural issues culminating in the building being red tagged as unsafe structure in 2024. Page 2 of my report, again, these are state statutory criteria under local redevelopment housing law for determining area need of rehabilitation. You only need to really find one of the five or six that are listed here as being appropriate and to be able to justify that. Further back into the report, we found three, so didn't have any real issue in addressing the criteria. We also provide a brief summary of the property as far as describing it. Page 3, there are tax maps showing the overall location of the property and the structures thereon. The second tax map there gives you a detail of the condo units. On page 4, we get a little more info from the tax assessment records, the tax assessment data for the property, showing the size of the units, the number of each of those sizes in the total assessed value. So there's a Google aerial shot at the bottom of page 4 for your reference. There's also a Google street view on page 5, is figure 4. The property is located in the city's 34th Street Gateway Zone. Neither the prior hotel nor the current residential condo are permitted uses in that zone. Really, the meat of the matter in this report is a structural evaluation. I'm not an engineer, not by a long shot, but have been multiple engineering studies, analysis done on this property. I found that the KIPCON report, which I reference in here frequently, was the most comprehensive and the most recent. They were hired by Seaspray Condo to perform a review of previous engineering reports and conduct a structural integrity inspection. The Inspections were performed by KIPCON on July 4th, July 11th, August 15th, 2024. Then they issued a report, their structural integrity report, preliminary analysis on September 16th, 2024. The next several pages in this report of mine are taken from KIPCON's report. So any of the conclusions you find in the next pages are KIPCON's, not mine. They provide a description as far as the property layout, where the building is, where the parking area is. On page 7, they touch on the flood zone. They use previous engineering reports. They were able to locate and observe evidence of differential settlement, damaged precast members and masonry walls, piers, and other issues noted by the previous engineers. They also made note of severe conditions. A deep foundation survey was done. This condition is well documented with several previous engineering evaluations. It was first noted in the 1980 conversion survey by Michael Highland Associates. To date, only one building section, D, has received any remediation of piles, which occurred in 1997. The untreated timber piles above the ground water level have been subjected to damage from insects and or dry rot. So it's pretty bad shape. Mm-hmm. According to KIPCON, they have a useful lifespan here. If you read this, I'm not going to go through and read everything that's in the report. Seed spray has reached the end of its useful life and will need either a complete restoration project or be demolished, according to KIPCON. They also provide relative probable costs for remediation. They are substantial, somewhere in the neighborhood of $181,000 per unit, not adjusted for unit size. City Council resolution states that repairs to make the building at the property safe for occupation have not been undertaken and appear beyond the financial capability of the condominium association. That's certainly reflected in the KIPCON report. Substantial improvement requirements, as if all of this isn't enough. In January 2013, New Jersey adopted emergency amendments to Flood Hazard Area Control Act rules, which basically say that if the property is restored or rehabilitated at 50% or more, we need to bring it up to code and we need to elevate it. That just adds to the difficulty in doing anything with the existing building as far as rehab or repair. Council resolution again states that the cost to repair the building at the property could exceed 50% of the value of the building, so that the building would be required to be elevated to comply with the current flood elevation standard, a process which would likely be cost prohibitive. Basically saying it would not happen. Page 9, KIPCON reviewed structural assessments from 6 independent professional engineering firms spanning a 44-year period, dating back to the initial 1980 conversion study. There's references to all those studies in the KIPCON report. A common theme with all of the engineering reports is the observed progressive deterioration of the building's primary load-bearing system and the lack of remediation to correct the deficiencies. Basically, nothing has been done, or very little. Based on the previous engineering estimates, KIPCON opines that the probable cost to stabilize this beam system would be in the range of $2.7 million to $3.6 million, or $83 to $116 per unit, not prorated. And I have a conclusion, basically, that the preliminary investigation prepared to assist the planning board in its consideration of City Council's resolution, which requests the planning board review and provide recommendations to whether sea spray property qualifies as an area need of rehab according to the statutory criteria. My professional opinion is that the current condition of the subject property is having a detrimental impact on the surrounding businesses, residents, and city as a whole. It's also my opinion that the information materials in this report provide the necessary justification for the planning board to find that Block 3306, Lot 1 qualifies as area need of rehab pursuant to New Jersey Statute 40A:12A-14 for the following reasons. A significant portion of the structure therein are in a deteriorated or substandard condition. That's borne out by the reports. Deteriorated substandard condition of sea spray condo, clear and documented by virtue of notice of unsafe structure, Appendix B, and the analysis contained in the above cited KIPCON report. Second criteria is that more than half of the housing stock in the delineated area is at least 50 years old. Although sea spray may not be considered typically as housing stock in the traditional sense, the age of the building contributes to its deteriorating substandard condition, in my opinion. Condition three, there is a pattern of vacancy, abandonment, or underutilization of the property in the area. City Council resolution states the building at the property remains red tag as an unsafe structure, remain unoccupied, and surrounded by obstruction fence since spring 2024. Implementing a program rehab is expected to prevent further deterioration of subject property and promote the overall development of the community. An affirmative finding by the planning board of block 3306 lot 1 qualifies an area in need of rehab is hereby recommended by yours truly. Designation of the subject property by city council as an area in need of rehabilitation does not confer any additional development rights to the property owner or developer. The 34th Street Gateway Zone remains in effect until such time the city council approves the developer's agreement and adopts a redevelopment plan for the subject property. The appendix are here. I want to draw your attention to Appendix A. The first page in that appendix on page 11 is City Council's resolution to the planning board requesting that you evaluate the property. The second, the next couple pages are City Council's draft resolution. That would be the format the City Council would adopt. Predicated upon the planning board making an affirmative finding that the area qualifies as an area of need. So that's basically a draft resolution City Council would consider at their next meeting. I've also included in the appendix reports from the construction office relative to the unsafe structure noticing, which there are two sets of those, so they've been noticed several times. The folks there are not able to occupy the property, and it seems beyond repair. My recommendation is to find a need rehab pursuant to the statutory criteria. That's all I have to
do. We do this on a resolution.
We'll hear from the public.
Nice. Open question, Jeff.
Joe, do you have anyone on the board have a question before we go to the public? Seeing none, I'd like a motion to open it up to the public.
So moved, Shepherd.
Do I have a second?
Barnes.
All in favor?
Aye.
At this point, I'm opening it up for the sea spray at 34th Street. Anybody from the public have any comment, please come forward. Seeing no public, need a motion to close the public.
So moved, Barnes.
Do I have a second?
Shepherd.
All in favor?
Aye.
Public's closed. Back to solicitor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The board might recall the last on the termination of an area in need of rehabilitation that we were able to handle was the property at 10th and the Bay, 10th and the Tail.
High Street Ward.
Right. And that one that was all.
Well,
that is the last one that we did. I think Mr. Shull's presentation adequately outlines from the board, the responsibility and the determination that has to be made. My instruction to you is, and from the resolution perspective, the chair can entertain a motion in the affirmative. I would say to accept and confirm the Shull report, and at the same time determine the air in the sea spray property to be an area in need of rehabilitation. And as you might recall from the Palin Avenue project that Mr. Adams just identified, there's going to be a responsibility that the applicant produced for the board. It's developed. It just doesn't happen. There are things that must be done by the applicant to ultimately have a determination made. But that doesn't concern us today. What concerns us today is adoption of and confirmation of the preliminary investigation presented by Mr. Shull and making a determination that the sea spray property is in fact an area in need of rehabilitation and then check and then obtain that in a motion in the project.
Based on what we've heard from our solicitor, do I have that motion? Do I have a second?
Barnes.
Mr. Allegretto?
This is a yes, no vote. We don't give reasons, right?
Well, I think it's always a good idea.
It should have some reasons in this.
Okay, let's make sure.
Yeah, I'm looking at this KIPCON. I look at the KIPCON photos. They're pretty self-explanatory.
I would say it helps you along with some of the reasoning. The statute, Mr. Shule is 100% correct when he identifies the sections of the statute that have to be identified. You only need a fraction of what the law requires. You don't need every condition, as long as you meet some of the conditions you can consider in the affirmative. And obviously, look, we all live here. We all know what the 34th Street Seaspray property looks like. This isn't a mystery. I'm presenting that instruction to you.
Mr. Allegretto?
I would vote yes. After reading the report and visiting the property, I agree that there's several criteria that are met that requires this be a need of rehabilitation. So I look forward to moving this forward and seeing what comes in the future. So I vote yes.
Mr. Barnes?
I also vote yes, given Mr. Shule's extensive report, and also my own personal knowledge of the property and the history of the property, driving around the property. I do believe that it's an area in need of rehabilitation, given all the evidence. It's a really important location, people coming in Ocean City in that corridor, so I too am looking forward to something positive happening there.
Mr. Shepherd?
I vote yes. Also, Randy, I'd like your report. It really articulates it, and again, that I've known the property for the time that I've been around here, and just looking at these pictures again, I wouldn't see anything different. Yes.
Mr. Adams?
I vote yes. The Shule report couldn't be any more clear. It's. I don't think you need any more evidence other than that. You physically have photos and every other engineering report that's been produced for the last 45 years on this site. Sure, the thing actively falling down in front of us, which may or may not be. I think all the evidence is clear that this is definitely a needed area of rehabilitation.
Mrs. Halliday?
I vote yes. I agree with the findings and conclusions in Mr. Shule's report that this area is in need of rehabilitation.
Mr. Loper?
I'm going to vote yes. I'm not an engineer, but when I look at the KIPCON paper photos, that tells me right there that it should be an area for redevelopment. And driving by for as long as I banked at Bank of America, I always looked at that building and thought, when was it going to fall down? And it hasn't yet, but it's in terrible condition. So I have to agree with everything everybody else said on the board tonight.
About the minutes.
Yeah, that's, where am I? Here we go. Can I adopt the minutes of 8-6-25? A motion? Someone?
You can still make a motion, just can't vote.
Come on, they're great minutes.
And Sean second. You can do an all in favor.
All in favor? For a 1 minute meeting?
Yeah.
And then we go to subcommittee reports. Mr. Shule.
Thank you again, Mr. Lipper. I had an opportunity tonight to review a proposal from the City Council again to review a proposal to go to send a request to the state to amend the New Jersey Residential Site Improvement Standards. For those of you that aren't familiar with the site improvement standards, that's again state criteria. It governs a lot of improvements to streets, roads, and roadway. It also, in this case, particularly it has to do with assigning parking spaces to residential uses.
yours, residential site improvement standards, RSIS, also contains provisions for exceptions, waivers, and special area standards. Planning Board Subcommittee was asked to review a proposal from the city requesting a special area standards change from RSIS in order to increase the off-street parking standard for residential uses in a specific geographic area when there are four or more bedrooms and four or more bathrooms in the unit. According to the city's February 15, 2025 draft letter, this request is based upon the anticipation that future construction within the second ward of Ocean City will see an increase of development of residential properties specifically designed for rental through the transient marketplace to multiple users, each of whom has a separate vehicle not shared with other or related users in the unit. So that's the charge the subcommittee was requested to review. The subcommittee reviewed this for several months through a course of 8 meetings. The meetings were very wide-ranging in scope. They focused primarily on land use, but as we got into it as a subcommittee, we found that there were other issues not directly related to land use that entered into this. Those were secondary, in my opinion, in consideration of the planning board's charge, but nonetheless, I mentioned a few of those in this summary. Over the course of the 8 months, we reviewed construction plans for three properties that were identified reportedly due to parking insufficient to support the number of bedrooms. In other words, it was reported that these units would be indicative of the anticipated problem. And I have addressed those there. The subcommittee was able to get a hold of construction plans. We didn't see the issues relevant in those construction plans that were reported. So it was, well, we looked at it, but we really didn't see the issue being recognized in those plans. We looked at, there was also a question about the grade level building area as far as how that space would be used. It was in conjunction with the request, there was some consideration that the grade level area under the residential buildings would no longer be screened, it would be left open so that it could not be used as habitable space. There are two sections in the ordinance that require screening of that, and the Planning Board Subcommittee thought that that screening was very important to retain the character and architectural integrity of the city's neighborhoods. I think Mr. Loper says you don't want to see the buildings elevated or open space. So that's certainly a land use issue the board had feelings about. Potential for construction of residential buildings with four or more bedrooms. By identifying over 800 4,000 square foot properties in the second ward. Basically, we went through the tax maps and we said, well, we would need a 4,000 square foot lot to get either a single or a duplex that would accommodate four bedrooms and four baths. What size lot do you need? It was considered that 4,000 would be the minimum, so we looked at the second ward and found that potentially, if those properties were redeveloped, you could potentially see over 800 properties with four bedrooms, four baths on these larger lots. As we got further into this, we started considering the fact that what we were talking about probably wasn't a traditional or typical residential unit. It sounded more like a commercial use, like a motel or hotel or a B&B. So we investigated a lodging house, which is described in New Jersey Administrative Code, within which a room or group of rooms rented are rented by separate family or groups of persons. And then there's also a definition for a lodging unit. I think it says something along the fact that those persons would be unrelated. And that sort of rang a bell with us as far as what we were probably talking about here with these anticipated types of units that were creating a potential issue with the transient renters. We looked at published accounts of problems associated with units rented via the transient marketplace. Airbnb and VRBO was a Forbes article. There was a couple of other articles out there that basically agreed with some of the issues that had come in front of the board as far as lockouts, alarms on some of the units not being addressed, and basically the properties not being overseen properly by their hosts. We looked at the city's mercantile license rental registration requirements that apply to all commercial properties. We also considered the definition for seasonal rental and rental management services, which is in the code, but there are no regulatory aspect that goes with either of those definitions, but there is some genesis of items or issues here that perhaps could be relevant to this transient rental issue. Planning Board made some preliminary findings and recommendations. We're basically looking at this point to get the Planning Board's agreement on the concepts that the subcommittee has found. The first one has to do with land use. The Planning Board subcommittee recognized adherence to RSIS parking requirements may not provide adequate off-street parking for larger residential units, 5-plus bedrooms, when rented by multiple and related tenants. RSIS permits a maximum of 3 parking spaces for 5-plus residential units. The second item there is not directly related to land use, so we might want to just look at that as being secondary or not particularly relevant to the Planning Board's consideration. Has to do with the rentals and the transients in the marketplace. Has to do with the lockouts, the fake listings, the hack accounts, but that's not specific to the master plan or what typically the Planning Board would find itself looking at. That perhaps there's other sections of the city code that would deal with that. The Planning Board subcommittee perceives that development concern is more akin to a lodging house than typical single family or duplex, and opines that lodging houses should be considered commercial development, similar to hotels and motels, not residential dwellings, and would therefore not be subject to RSIS requirements as far as parking. And then the recommendations further down are that, again, the augmentation of rental registration can be deferred to City Council for consideration aside from this particular issue because it doesn't have to do with land use. But the other two land use issues that are listed here, to define and establish conditional use controls for lodging houses and hospitality zone on the west side of Ocean Avenue between 9th and 14th Street. And secondly, to clarify the distinction between a single family dwelling and a lodging house, revise the single family dwelling definition to require a minimum 600 square feet of floor area designed as common open space that may contain a kitchen, dining area, family room, etc. What we were envisioning in these problematic transient rental units was that you were going to get a home that would be constructed as a single family home, but it wouldn't be occupied as a single family, typically as a single family home. If it had a living room, a dining room, a kitchen, it would be minimal in space. The predominant space in the unit would be used for bedrooms and bathrooms. And there would be no control over who occupied that. There isn't currently control over that, but that was where the rub came in, and that was why we thought we needed to, if we're going to pursue this with some potential ordinances, we would need to distinguish between perhaps a lodging house, or whatever you want to call it, and a typical single-family home that you would want to have occupied by a family in a traditional sense, where you would have a living room, dining room, kitchen. A considerable space, 600 square feet, was thought of as minimal for that type of common space within those units. So that's what we have at this point. I will try to answer questions. Mr. Barney?
Questions for Mr. Shull?
This made my head spin. I have a lot of questions. So I'm very familiar with the ordinance, deal with it on a regular basis. And your explanation helped to kind of clarify that this is beyond just land use. So the hospitality zone is one of many, many zones, and that's the area that it seems to be kind of focusing in on, the 9th to 14th streets. That's just a portion of the zone. So it almost feels like we're trying to reverse engineer something to fit this portion of blocks that may have impacts for all the rest of the zones that aren't fully thought out. Like if we change the definition of a single family dwelling, 600 square feet is really arbitrary. And I'm just not sure that everything has been thoroughly kind of followed through on. And like, what about renovation work? If someone wants to renovate in that zone, are they then held to a new parking standard where they may have an existing non-conforming condition? So I just think there may be some areas where more thought needs to be given to how it would impact the rest of the zones. Like the lodging house currently isn't defined in our ordinance. The in the hospitality zone, the principal uses that are allowed are motel, hotel, rooming house, guest house, bed and breakfast, restaurant, retail sales, retail service, commercial lot, satellite hotel. It goes on and on. There's already a lot of permitted uses in that zone. So to invent one more.
Like what's the difference between a lodging house and like a rooming house or bed and breakfast? They rent out rooms to unrelated parties.
Yeah,
and like B&Bs.
I agree. There's a lot of details that we need to be fretted out on this. That's why I think I tried to indicate
one.
I know some of this gets maybe a little more, maybe too specific with the 600 square feet. I'm trying to get basically an agreement on the concept as far as whether or not any of this needs to be addressed via the zoning ordinance, land use ordinance, or whether it's whether we're going in the wrong direction with that. And obviously, tell us in the details, and I don't disagree, but there was the thought process with the subcommittee was that this type of use is probably not much different than some of the accommodations that are out there. Perhaps. I'm not really familiar with some of the other accommodation uses, but it may, if it's going to be allowed anywhere, the hospitality zone would seem to be the place for it. Because of the type of use it is, it would be something that would provide a different investment opportunity in a limited area, conditionally. I mean, you would have to get conditions on where, when, and how, and all the specifics would need to be worked out for that to occur.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
no, that's
right. The first thing I thought of was like, what's the difference?
Well, a bed and breakfast or guest house has to have management on site.
What about a rooming house?
Rooming house, I don't know what the laws are on rooming houses.
And then, Gary, correct me if I'm wrong, because I know we saw this at the zoning board, the Christian Brothers site, where it's all these unrelated people living, but it's considered a single unit. There was case law on that, and I think it came to zoning board. Keith Davis arguing that even though it's all these different people live in there, it's still considered a single family unit.
Well, if I could speak on that, because I spent a lot of time in the subcommittee, and the whole impetus of this subcommittee and what Randy's discussing tonight was based on a city councilman's desire to regulate residential development with anything that had more than four bedrooms and four conjoined bathrooms. And because in that person's opinion, there is and will be an influx of rooming houses or Airbnb, VRBO style houses that when we researched it, basically these do exist and they're known as lodging houses, and there's a definition for it. Now, we don't have that. we should have that in our ordinance if this is going to be a future type of development that we're going to see here, and it's going to be a future problem that we're going to see as it relates to parking and density and everything else. And so what the subcommittee's idea was to, if we are going to introduce this as a type of development along with all the others that exist, hotel, motel, satellite hotel, all the things that you read, these other uses, it would be one more definition, it would be one more use, and it would have a certain set of standards whereby if somebody were to develop a building like this and fell into that category where it had more than four bedrooms with four conjoined baths and very little common area, which is how these things are designed, then it would fall into a commercial type situation, which RSI standards would not apply. And so that kind of, that logic pushed it out of the realm of, okay, now we need to change RSI standards for the whole zone and impact all the other residential development when only a small portion of potential development is what the perceived problem is or could be. So I don't know if that clears it up at all, but.
And the perceived problem came from St. Augustine, Florida. I mean, it's like, it's almost comical. The other elephant in the room when we were doing this, Dottie sat in on one of our, or several of our meetings, and she threw up, you know, she said, there's nothing to prevent somebody from condoing a bedroom and a bathroom if they're connected. There's nothing that says that can't be condoed in a building. So do you want to see that all over the island? Mini condos? You know, I don't think that's a good idea for anybody. So we tried to reduce it to where it would fit within our zoning ordinance. And we felt that that section that you're looking at on Ocean Avenue, the west side, is probably the safest place. Because the reality of it is, a lot of that's already developed.
But how do you, single family development, anything that does not require board approval or site plan approval goes through straight zoning, and they don't go by the RSI standards. So how would you implement that?
Well, if we're talking about the lodging houses?
No, like you were talking about the single family. We rarely see single family unless it needs zoning board approval or something wacky, but otherwise it's pretty much permitted anywhere. But they don't follow RSI standards because they're not required to.
I can't comment whether they follow the standards or not, but if the definition changed and they start seeing single family homes that come in with 20 square feet of common space and 15 bedrooms, I'm exaggerating, they know it's not a single family home anymore. It's a lodging house and it's not permitted in the zone.
So if somebody happens to build a big house on a big lot, we're going to force them to, and I'm just thinking out loud, force them to call it a lodging house?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
You're going to build a big house on a big lot, you're going to have more than 600 square feet, or at least 600 square feet of common area.
Right. Maybe six bedrooms or something. So right. it's no longer a single family?
Sure it is.
Oh, it is.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you just said it's
the common space. It's the kicker. If it's got 600 or more square feet of common space, it's a single.
So my concern with that is...
Oh, I gotcha.
Defining, the definitions in the ordinance apply to all zones.
Yeah.
So to have a separate definition for single family in hospitality zone on these four blocks...
No, you wouldn't have that.
It gets so nuanced.
You wouldn't have that. You wouldn't have the single family home definition would apply citywide, whatever it is.
But so if you're building a smaller house on a smaller lot, maybe you won't have 600 square feet of common space.
But you're not going to have more than four bedrooms with four conjoined baths either on a small lot on a small house.
I mean, we can all speculate,
but the
as an architect, I've designed a lot of houses. people want bathrooms that are ensuite bedrooms so that when their children visit, everyone has their own bathroom. And to try to guess how development and design will proceed, I just fear that like we're making limitations where we don't exactly understand the impact.
It's a limitation for density, and it's just the lesser of the two evils for what the alternative is, what the councilman wants.
So to Jamie's point, the hospitality zone has its own off-street parking and loading requirements that is separate from RSIS. So it spells out the uses and then the parking that applies to those uses.
But none of those uses are residential, so RSIS doesn't apply anyway.
So why are we trying to change RSIS if it doesn't apply?
That's the problem. We have a council person that wants to put the initials all over his whole ward.
I think it to read the initial request, right, was about four bedrooms or four baths, you know, required four parking spots, I think is what was impetus for this.
Got it.
So I think subcommittee looked at, if this is, all right, we have to look at this because this is a request for a subcommittee to report on, so how can we, and it really was supposed to be for the second ward, not the whole island, was a request too. So I think you look at, so within the second ward, we're
going to live outside the hospitality zone in the second ward.
But if the development qualifies as a single family,
and it's your dream
and it doesn't require any sort of board approval, only two spaces are required.
It would never happen under what?
Under, that's what zoning qual, they don't go by RSIS.
Well, I think that's where it kicks in, where you did
report.
What we're trying to do is get something on the table with council.
I mean, you should have more, but if that's what the ordinance says, and the ordinance does not say that they have to follow RSIS.
It's in the hospitality zone.
In the real world, the warrant,
it eliminates the initials for parking. I hate initials. That's IR, whatever it is. So it eliminates that. So our parking requirement.
I think John Batt came in with a few subdivisions and wanted to put single families in the attic of the zoning board because the lots didn't exist at the time.
We have a council or a council person or maybe a group of council people or a pair, let's say, that want to curb and quash single family development and duplex development in a particular zone because of one problem, which is, they say, is parking. Okay, so we looked at it and we said, okay, what's the problem with parking? Well, the problem is that it's starting to happen. It's happening over here in Florida, and it's going to happen over here, and it's happening all around the country, and it's going to happen here next. You're going to have development that in a resort town, which we live in, that's going to have an intense use where it's not going to be the traditional single family or duplex home with one family with one or two cars. It's going to be four different families with four different cars, and thereby for every bedroom we want to have a parking space. And RSIS won't let us do that, so we have to appeal to the state to change the RSIS rules to say all across the board everyone's going to have to do this from here on out. What our response was after we looked at it and studied the potential problem was, okay, we can only really possibly do this on lots that are 4,000 square foot or larger, and it could only possibly happen whereby if you had four bedrooms with four attached bathrooms and a limitation or greater and a limitation of common area, because you can only fit so much in the box, right? So we then discovered the definition of lodging house, which actually fits what the council people brought up to begin with. What they're talking about is what's known as a lodging house. A house under one roof with multiple bedrooms and attached baths with very little common space where four or five or however many rooms there are, people bring separate cars and create a lot of congestion, a lot of parking problems and everything. And so by adding that in as a definition, as a type of construction, and regulating that, pulling it out of harm's way, we'll say, for residential development, making it, considering it a commercial use, then we can make, we as a local ordinance can regulate parking in any way we want without going through RSI, without going through the state. And so it kind of takes that fear off the table of, oh, well, the zones or the war is going to be permeated with these sorts of buildings that are going to cause parking nightmares all over the place. Well, it won't be. If you have that type of development, then you can say, okay, now in this type of development, now you need,
but isn't,
now you need four spaces for each bedroom.
Please.
Isn't that how we control
we're picking you up.
The triplex development in the HD zone?
Yes.
What he sees, yeah.
So this should be, there is a model for that than we have now.
Right, and this just that, this just separates that type of development and puts it into that bucket, let's say, or that, and then shields all the rest of it. Because they want this for the whole zone, all of
they want it for the
whole ward. Excuse me,
lots of the ward,
and it only starts there.
So how do you prevent a house that comes in with four bedrooms and two dens?
Two dens are going to be 600 square feet.
But I mean, are the dens going to be considered common space? You know, they're going to be bedrooms.
The den is common space. Anything but a bedroom is common space. A kitchen, a den, a foyer, a study. It's not hard to do.
Even if the den's not with the other...
Well, we're talking about...
Off the living room. Let's say it's on the second
floor. We're talking about bedrooms with attached beds.
Well, but that's what I mean. So come in, you can't have a den with an attached bedroom? Or what else? With a study?
A den is considered common area. Anything but a bedroom is considered, as far as I know, am I correct if I'm wrong, but it's considered.
But I mean, do we have, is there a definition of bedroom? Because I know I see it a lot.
It comes in as,
it comes in as a den, study, library.
But we're only talking about bedrooms that have existing baths attached to them.
Ensuite bedrooms.
Ensuite bedrooms. We're not talking about a den that doesn't have a bathroom.
No, I'm talking about a den that does have a bathroom. That to get around, I've seen it.
Well, you're always going to have that.
What I mean. So does the den count towards, what does it count towards? The common area?
The den is common area.
Thinking out loud.
Now you can't regulate every little thing, but what you can do is regulate what's...
Dean, in your experience, have you been seeing these types of buildings?
Very little, if any, but we're reacting to what is being threatened, let's say, by future development in this town.
Got it. From the design side, I've seen no requests to maximize bedrooms and minimize common space.
Agreed, and that's why we believe that this is this takes the fear that the I don't want to throw anybody under the bus or act as if what they're purporting is
we know what you're talking about.
But it's taking a talking point, throwing ice water on it, saying, okay, you're right. If what you say is true or potentially true, then yeah, we have to look at that, and that's what we did. And here's how to get around it, and that's what we did.
And here's an area you can do it in.
And for clarity, we're talking just about that specific area.
Because of
the hospitality.
That ward.
Second ward or just that area?
Second ward, Randy, it's...
We're just talking about the hospitality zone?
Yes.
Yes.
The ward is...
It's only
the area where you permit would be just...
The wards are different.
Just several blocks from hospitality.
So it would be like an overlay type zone? So
it's brought up in the second ward.
Yeah, it would be
the most congested.
Stay away from spot zoning.
So you couldn't do it on West Avenue, sir.
You take the use, you make it commercial, you take it whatever, make it respond to the site plan, bring it before the planning board, and control with the park. That's how you do it.
Yeah, but if it's a permitted use, it doesn't have to come to us.
No,
For commercial uses. But not for like single or duplex development.
First thing. Right. We're just sitting outside, we're trying to separating them from
And the logic is
one. I mean, really, to put a bow on it, we agree with the councilman about that type of development. We as a subcommittee agree with the councilman that that type of development could be detrimental in terms of density, parking, congestion, overpopulation, and all the rest. And so we looked at how could that be done, where would it be done, how would it be designed, how would it be built, and how can we control it without affecting everybody else. And everybody else being the person who wants to build a house with four bedrooms and with attached bathrooms that might not necessarily going to use it as a rooming house or a lodging house. And because we want to punish them, or we want to like handcuff that. But we also observed and agreed with the councilman on a potential problem with that type of development. So that was our solution. Or a proposed solution, we'll say, to eliminate it or control it without having state intervention.
I mean, you can certainly put in exemptions and all for existing properties that want to come for rehab or renovation, it wouldn't be subject to. There's ways you can deal with those types of issues, and there's certainly ways you can deal with the amount of common space. I mean, we talked about should it be a percentage of the overall floor area. Maybe that's a different way of getting at it. Maybe that would help work through the smaller units you're talking about, wouldn't penalize them if the house is 1,200 square feet. You don't want to have 600 square feet of common space. So you could deal with that too. And I don't disagree with that. I think there are ways to get at those issues. I hate making the ordinance more complicated, which is exactly where this is going. But this is kind of where we are at this point with the trying to get some sort of reasonable or rational response to the request.
And after doing this study, and we found 480 lots in that second ward, all of it would affect 480 lots. And that is ludicrous, because there's some areas that aren't really even commercial in the second ward, even though everything in the city is in the second ward.
And
from Bayfront to Boardwalk. I mean,
and John, when you say 480 lots, are you referring to the whole ward?
Yes, the whole ward.
It's a shame.
480 lots, that if this went through the way it was proposed.
824.
One other thing I'd like to
824.
Shannon has a designer.
Oh, sorry, I'm dyslexic too. But
you have the person that wants the
800 lots. I mean, it's ludicrous.
Would that be even
you're doing this to 800 lots
required for off-street parking spaces,
and some of them are not in
at
commercial
minimum, maybe a lot more
areas,
because that's what they
so
want.
Lock it down. Let's do it.
Right. I think having a space per bedroom is detrimental.
That's what we
there's
think.
Not enough real estate to accommodate
yes.
that.
Yes. The other thing too is parking really is not a problem in Ocean City, and I heard this the other day. Parking is an inconvenience, and it's an inconvenience because you can't park right in front of your front door. You might have to park a block down to get to your front door.
Well, that's
the out-of-towners
commitment.
I know. I'll go back to 4th and Wesley, you know, Memorial Field. This summer, you can park around that whole area with no issues, you know. And we also did the study on the parking lots, and the parking lots weren't filled this summer. Except 4th of July weekend.
So the interesting thing is now we have the technology in mind.
You know, we had the technology to look at all this. We didn't just stumble into this stuff. I mean, that's why
it's... On the lots.
Randy, is this part of a master plan re-exam recommendation, or this strictly came from council?
I don't know. Okay. Well, look at the glory.
Am I looking at a lot of noticing? Possibly.
And if council puts...
It's not in the master plan?
You know, this is just a recommendation of council.
I'm not sure.
They can do what they want with it. But it's
everybody that's
we think recommendation is rudimentary. We also agree that we should bring in some people like Shannon and others that are professional architects, designers, to have their input because we value those opinions. We certainly don't want to do, none of us are experts at everything. We want to do something that's right and not cause unintended consequences. So this is, again, rudimentary and the framework of where our heads are with this.
So we don't necessarily have to give council an answer this week, right? Or do we?
I
it's a resolution.
with...
Wait, if you need, if you want to open up to the public and she can come up?
Yeah, at some point, maybe. But right now we're in discussion.
Do this.
I think that we need to send a recommendation back to council this week. I really think so. We've spent our time doing it. We've done our due diligence. Throw it back on the council table. They can come back to us at some point, and then we'll go from there. But you know,
I agree. I think I mean, little things like square footage versus percentage square footage. I mean, when I say re-mention, I'm not talking about major changes. I'm just talking about minor things that would make the ordinance better or not better.
I mean, I'm not.
But overall,
Getting into some of the recommendations, I don't know about all this real estate office recommendation stuff makes sense, but I think that's not our bailiwick anyway. So I think that needs, you know, Dottie and you people to sort that out and come up with how you want to manage the existing VROB, BB, whatever they are, and all over town. You know, I mean, that's an issue because we, in the process of doing this, we've gotten police input, and there's been some horror stories out there, and I'm not going to elaborate on them tonight, but I've talked to you about some of them. You know, and being in the business, I've had people come up to my front porch going, my place wasn't even there that I rented. What do I do? And my answer was always, under the boardwalk, down by the sea. I mean, I don't know what you do. You know, I mean, it's just, in today's electronic world, you can double book something, triple book something so easy. You know, I mean, it's awful. But I think that's council's problem, not our problem at the planning board.
Right. My thoughts exactly. I don't.
I mean, the housing stock is our problem, and I think we've come up to a logical conclusion of where these things could take place, you know, if you decide that it makes sense. But I couldn't see hurting everybody else in the ward on a ridiculous parking problem. I mean, it's, and Shannon's very right. I mean, you know, if you wanted to build a nice house, you know, back by the bay someplace in the ward, if this all went through the way it was proposed, you wouldn't be able to do it.
But you would be able to do it if we, for example, were to stick to this recommendation, is keeping the hospitality zone.
Keeping in the hospitality zone, keeping in the area that we've kind of designated. We did a street survey when we went out to figure out where this might fit. And we did that survey, and we kind of came up with 9th to 14th Street, and that's where it will fall into. So I think I'd like to see it go to council, because council's, there's a council person screaming for this, and we'll give it to them, and we agree with them, and this is our solution.
We'll put in the form of motion. The chair can entertain a motion to be affirmed and submit the recommendations to the council by the end of the week, 10 days
or Randy's report.
Yeah, Randy's report.
No. I'm going to want to revise because there's a few things in here.
Okay.
Specifically, on the back page, to mid first, the first findings and recommendations, that second paragraph comes out. And under the preliminary recommendations down at the bottom, the first paragraph comes out.
Then I'm going to change that motion to send along the recommendations with the changes to be made by the plan.
By what?
To Randy will make the changes and we'll see.
You want to keep this 600 square foot minimum?
I was thinking maybe it's a square footage or a percentage. A minimum square foot or percentage, and kind of leave that open. Like I said, it's kind of tough to get that specific at this stage. But I think there's ways, if you kind of agree with the concept the planning board is presenting here, I think there are ways, again, to make the ordinance more complicated, but there are ways to address concerns and alleviate some issues.
And we'll come back to you for consistency.
I mean, it's got to go back to council. Council's got to say yay or nay, and then we would get direction from them. There was going to be any ordinance changes anyway. We don't have time for that, but we're just trying to get past this point in the process. Oh,
you might think that works.
Do they still, would they need RSIS approval?
For who?
No. It's in a commercial zone. Commercial building.
To Dean's point, and in your document here, you have lodging house defined. Are we going to go towards defining that in our own ordinance?
Yes.
Okay.
We would. And there's also, there'd be a corollary, a definition of lodging unit, which is within the lodging house. And that's state statute too, but I think we could fine tune that to be more appropriate for the city if we need to. I was just kind of using that as a guide to say, wow, look at this. This looks like what we're talking about. But I think we could work with that and we'll modify it as needed.
Okay. And then another question. This is more general point. Rhesus. Once, if we were to go to rhesus, is there a way to get come back?
No.
Once it's there, it's changed?
I don't have that kind
like
of history.
Like if we're going a different direction than what we're talking about here.
I don't have that history with them. I guess not.
I asked Dottie that in a meeting. And she said other cities have gone that route, but I didn't get an answer whether anybody's ever able to overturn it. I think once it's there, I think it's like with any state reg. Once it's there, it's hard to back out of it, particularly since you asked for it. We don't want that anymore. You know, we don't want to have license plates on our
but
cars.
That's what I thought the purpose of this was. They wanted to RSIS. Requires maximum 3 spaces for 5 bedrooms. And I thought the whole thing was we wanted to go beyond that.
Well,
we needed RSIS approval.
The councilman did.
Right. Okay, so that's not what that's not what we're doing here then.
No.
Okay.
No, that okay. was they wanted to change the RSIS.
Right.
Which would encapsulate the whole board.
Okay, I got you.
And they the state can do that. But do you want the state coming into our 840-foot lots saying this is what you can only do on your lot?
No.
I don't want the state coming in here telling me anything.
What this ordinance
I'm
an do is now take the sand in my shoes. Problem and allow us, outside of RSIS, a municipality, to make our own rules in terms of we could say, well, this is the kind of parking we want for this type of building.
And that was one of the overriding. That was the overriding reason why council we voted in the majority to send it to
yes.
planning board
correct.
Because we
yeah.
want control as a town.
This gives us the control correct. On our own.
So our ordinance would supersede RSIS?
No.
No. So now I'm confused.
Lodging house would be commercial use. Would not. RSIS would not.
RSIS is only residential, not.
So let's say again a residential unit with 8 bedrooms, single family. RSIS says
it's not a residential use anymore now because it's going to fall under the definition of lodging house, which makes it commercial use.
How can you force somebody though who owns a home to say it's commercial? They don't rent it out. Let's say they live there year round.
We're talking about new development though.
We're not going retroactive.
But that's what I mean. How can you?
You know, more open space.
How can you make them?
It wouldn't be a lodging house because of
call
that.
It a commercial.
It wouldn't be. If they're going to use it that way, that's what it gets called. That's what it is.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if they're living there year round and it's a brand new 8 bedroom home, they only live in it.
They
according to RSIS.
If they have the minimal common space we're talking about, then they're.
Well, no, they do. Let's say they do.
Their house.
So then they're only required the RSI by the RSI standard. Actually, no, it would be zoning. If it doesn't need any variance of site plan approval, it would be straight zoning, which only requires 2 spaces per unit. Right? Yeah,
right.
Shannon.
No.
Well, that's what I mean.
So
how can you?
The hospitality zone has its own off-street parking and loading requirements, and it lists out hotel and motel within certain units, retail and sales, restaurants, professional offices, residential dwelling units, 2 parking spaces per dwelling unit. Off-site parking spaces may be provided through one or a combination of the following. This is where you can like pay for spaces in public lots that are within walking distance. And then it goes on to stacked parking. If parking is the real concern, rather than like creating new terms and definitions, maybe it's just a line item in that zone for parking, given the criteria of lodging house that has been spelled out.
But he is looking at the whole ward. all 840 lots. Or what was the number again?
Yeah, 840. 800.
800.
You know, I mean, he's looking.
I understand he has a big target for this. The ward zones are different than the zoning ordinance zones. So we're not even talking about the same areas.
But he wants every place there is a bedroom and a bath over five of them. He wants a parking space for every single one of those.
Over four.
Yeah, over four. So if you go to your fifth one, he wants a parking space for everything. So if you build on a 40-foot lot back on the bay someplace, you want to build a nice house back on the bay in this ward, and you're building your nice house with five bedrooms, five bathrooms, you're going to need...
If we say that's never going to happen...
Who said it's never going to happen? That's going to happen. It's already happened. Those houses are already being built in this ward.
No. The parking, that parking requirement.
Right.
Like,
you can't.
As a board... Aren't we the people that can say?
He wants to change. He wants to go to. He wants to go to the initial place at the state and change our law to say that anything over four with attached baths has to have a new standard created by the state that every place has a parking space.
Actually, I think it's four or more.
Four or more. So I mean, it's like.
And so now that four-bedroom, four-bath house on the bay that you want in the second ward needs four parking spaces. If it's five-bedroom, five-bath, five parking spaces.
We're assuming the state's going to say yes?
So it's no assumption if that's what the council...
That's what he's asking. That's what council would be asking for.
Well, so that's why I'm asking. Does it need RSIS yes. approval? Does it need state approval?
The state
it sounds like
yes.
it does.
Yeah. We want to keep it out of the state's hands to start with.
Of course.
I've got two council people in the room right now. I mean, that's why I'm glad you're here. You're hearing what we went through for 8 months.
And I appreciate the amount of work you guys have done.
And you know, it's scary. I mean, if you look at even a little house in Walton Place Lagoon could get killed by this.
I get it.
Yeah.
My last comment would be...
That's why we've narrowed it to be in the hospitality zone, where it belongs. We can control the parking in the hospitality
zone. So I just want to point out, hospitality has its own off-street parking requirements.
Right.
And they're all commercial.
They're all commercial.
It has nothing to do with RSIS hospitality.
It's nothing to do with RSIS.
Well, residential dwellings are a permitted use in the hospitality zone.
Yes.
Yes. But... when's the last time you saw one?
Well, that's a good point, and it probably needs to be cleaned up. There's also an overriding clause in the ordinance, 25.312. Parking requirements contained herein are hereby superseded by RSIS to the extent that these regulations are applicable. So this has been in the ordinance since, 2012? So... In actuality, that section of the ordinance doesn't comply with this section. Surprise, surprise, there's a conflict in the code, but RSIS would apply to residential in the hospitality zone, whether it says it there or not.
Got it. My last comment is that sometimes the zoning officer enforces the ordinance not exactly knowing the intent, so to the best of their knowledge, but it's not always the way that the ordinance was intended to be. So I think if possible, it'd be a good idea to like incorporate feedback from Jessica, yeah, just to make sure she understands the intention. Because she's the one at the end of the day.
You're right. Once it goes through the process, Jessica would be involved in the process when we get it off home plate here.
You got construction officials.
And you got construction officials that have to understand it, you know, what we're doing. You know, I mean, it trickles down the whole 12th Street.
We don't have anything yet.
you know, there's no law yet, but I mean, this is his first bite on the law.
So the recommendation is to make these changes, but not send it off to RSIS. Because RSIS may say, oh yeah, that's great. Right. We're going to blanket it. You know, so they're not going to say, oh, Ocean City only has to do nine.
There isn't anything here that would apply to RSIS. So we don't need to send
it. No, it's not going to
RSIS. No, not us. I mean, council. I thought that was the...
council just told...
wanted
to do that.
To contact RSIS and change the parking requirement. I thought that was the whole thing.
No, one councilman wants
it. Well, one councilman. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. That's why we made the majority.
Well, that's
made
what we also. I mean, if they take this and say, "Oh yeah, let's send this off to RSIS," and they blanket, let's say they do change it now. We're it's yeah. Now what we're trying, what you guys are trying to prevent. RSI says, nope, sorry, it's all or nothing.
It's important to note that the one councilman that believes this is necessary to go to RSIS and change parking for the entire ward for every development, because of one particular type of development that he cites and others that have been built with these things, this, what we have before you really eliminates that. But it goes in agreement with what he says, which is one parking spot for every bedroom. If you build something like that he's saying is going to be a problem or is a problem, those particular buildings and those particular buildings only would revert to that scenario where you need one for each room, one for each bedroom. And so we agree with that. What we don't agree with is that blanketing the entire ward, and this prevents that from happening.
Because it would be an ordinance.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, I was going to say, because it's an ordinance, specifically.
Well, it's an ordinance, and it changes,
well,
it changes the category of development.
Okay.
If I understand Shannon's point, if it's in the hospitality zone, does the hospitality zone parking supersede anything that we're talking about here today? Is that going to be...
The hospitality zone is commercial.
Yes.
Already?
Yes?
Yes.
So.
Well, residential is permitted in hospitality.
Then this is what we should
do. Permitted anywhere.
We should take the report, the recommendation that Randy's done. Randy makes the changes. He gives it back to the subcommittee. The subcommittee says, yes, this works. Then it goes over to the council, not having to come back to the full board. And there's a squabble with the subcommittee, and you got to bring it back.
Okay. That's not a problem.
I'm good with it.
I'm good with
what
it.
Randy said with his edits and the concern about the square footage versus percentage of common space.
Okay. That works. And you can take a motion.
Right. I guess the only thing is, I think we're trying to get at least an idea from the planning board subcommittee before council. I believe maybe a resolution is Friday on the agenda, kind of addressing this. So if you put delay this, then they would never hear the planning board's even any kind of recommendations before they pass something that could go to RSIS.
I'm not asking for delay, but maybe it's the change.
Well,
wait a minute. Isn't that resolution different than what?
We're not doing a resolution, though.
I know.
City council.
Oh.
City council. That's all.
I believe the city council's resolution is actually different than this.
Yes.
Yeah. It goes farther.
Right. I mean, also, the planning board did what they were supposed to.
Oh, is that the new one?
The resolution came different than what was asked.
Well, that's. I was going to bring that up because I don't want to mix apples and oranges here. But there's a second resolution that's right behind this one that's even worse. I mean, it's just, you know, and for all the years I've sat here, and I've sat here through every single one of these photographs, I mean, I'm the oldest statesman in the city. I have yet to see this ever happen. I am just horrified by it.
So this, by the way, was created in based on the exact type of development that the councilman originally brought up. Since then, it's become more stringent. But
this wasn't. He got wind of this, and this wasn't enough.
Yeah.
Well. So now he wants to come back with more.
But this is based on
I'd like to send this to council as our recommendation on the first issue.
With Randy's revision.
With Randy's revision. And two of the people are right here, and we agree with Randy's revision.
Okay.
Well, we can vote on that.
Take that motion right now. We'll make the motion.
Adams.
Second.
Loper.
Mr. Allegretti. Mr. Allegretti.
Yes.
Mr. Barnes.
Yes.
Mr. Shepard.
Yes.
Mr. Adams.
Yes.
Mrs. Halliday.
What am I agreeing to?
No. to forward Randy's report to council with the two changes.
With the changes.
Yes.
Mr. Loper?
Yes.
Done. Good. Randy will get me that revised. You get me that revised whenever. Manana, okay.
And is your revision going to include are you going to tweak that 600 square feet?
I'm going to nix the 600 altogether, and I'm going to say a minimum square footage or percentage of floor area. And just leave that open for it. Now, it's too early to get that specific.
Randy, I wonder too if it's.
If that's okay.
Yeah.
If it's possible to rather than.
I love it.
Create more details on single family dwellings to have those. Limitations outlined in the lodging house definition rather than single family dwelling.
I think that would come with the ordinance change. I mean, if it goes that far now in the report.
If you talk about what's actually in, whether actually we need to change the definition for singles or single family homes.
Right, like. Is there a way to achieve what we're trying to achieve without changing the single family dwelling definition, which I don't even know that
you can. Can you exempt single family from this lodging house area? That's not the whole problem.
That's not. I don't think that's what Shannon's asking about. I think she's asking whether the definition of a single family home is enough to differentiate it from
lodging.
I don't think it is.
Got it.
I have it here somewhere. Okay. One family dwelling unit, a detached building which includes one kitchen, internal stairs connecting all floors within the building, and designed for and occupied exclusively by one or more persons living as a single nonprofit housekeeping unit. I don't know what a housekeeping unit is. I don't think it's defined. And one kitchen doesn't really help us too much because it doesn't say how big the kitchen has to be.
But so what if the definition for lodging house was, you know, a dwelling with bedrooms and common living space less than 600 square feet.
Yeah, that might work.
I'll tell you that one Christian Brothers site, Keith Davis will tell you what a single housekeeping unit is. I think that one site has, it's got to have like 10 bedrooms in it. And a common area. Did that come to us or did zoning, do you have to appeal to the zoning board? Yeah. So we've got to be careful. I mean, you know, be careful about the housekeeping unit. And
that is causing the problem that they're trying to prevent. So.
All the people in there are unrelated.
Well, I'm going to get the
But it's considered one housekeeping unit. Or something.
I'm not really wanting to touch housekeeping unit or family at all, because I don't know what that is.
But
I think the idea of just kind of flipping that definitional aspect of it and saying, to clarify, this is the last bullet here, clarify the distinction between a single family dwelling and lodging house, revise or provide a lodging house definition that requires or a lodging house, something along the lines, would have less than 600 square feet
right.
Common area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do we have a definition of common area?
And then you don't have to modify the single-family dwelling.
No, but I talk about a common space here that contains kitchen, dining area, family room, etc.
Would it consider a stairwell? You know what I mean? Like, I'm just thinking, we've got very creative professionals out there.
They can only be creative enough to go from 9th Street to
14th Street. Again, right now, steps over here at this point is really difficult getting them out. Get drilled down on specifics.
Okay.
I won't be here for the next round.
Well, the planning board's okay with me modifying that last line. As Shannon indicated, I think I like that better than having to touch the single family dwelling. Kind of leave that alone. Mm-hmm. And just put all the restrictions on the lodging house. Okay. I'll work on that.
I don't want to extend this discussion anymore, but you might be able to have control by how it's owned.
Ownership's hard, isn't it?
No
harm. What about like when LLCs own buildings, though? I feel like it gets complicated.
I don't think we can control form of ownership. If somebody wants a condo, they want it. Yeah,
one of the conversations with Dottie was, you know, there's nothing to prevent somebody from taking a bedroom and a bathroom and making a condo. You can condo a boat slip, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, it's like...
with no bathroom.
With no bathroom.
Right. Four bedrooms, four baths, little kitchenette. And the developer says, okay, I'm a condo four ways. I'm going to sell every one of these things. Now you know there's going to be four, five, six, seven cars coming in and out. That's he's right. This could happen. Yeah. And this is, you know, could be the future, maybe the future.
Well, they got from 9th Street to 14th Street to make it happen. And I don't know. I don't know what else you'd do with it.
They can make it happen next week.
Oh, yeah. It's much bigger. Second Ward has everything in the city in it, from the bay to the boardwalk. You name it, it's in the Second Ward. And if I'm not mistaken, the bulk of the year-round population lives in the Second Ward.
A motion to adjourn.
Yeah, can we get a motion? Can we get a motion to adjourn? This makes up for the 1 minute meeting.